This is A Sustainable Mind, episode 57. I'm Marjorie Alexander, and thanks for joining me for today's episode. You are in for a super informative conversation with our go-to plastics expert. But before we do that, I want to show a little bit of love to our newest supporter, Belinda from Victoria, Australia. Belinda writes, "Hi, Marjorie. I've been binging on your podcast for the last few weeks. Thank you for what you are doing. I love the format and your down-to-earth approach. You don't preach, and you're humble, as are your guests. Your most recent guest said something about just doing something, and the two young guys talked about small actions and following your passions. Well, I have been doing the small stuff for a few years. Now I am going to follow my passions. There are lots of good things happening here in Australia, so I am going to get involved and see what it leads to. Come visit. I think you'd like it here. Reach out if you do. Cheers from a big fan, Belinda." Thanks, Belinda, for such a wonderful email. It's messages just like that and contributions like yours that are keeping this podcast going. If you would like to get in touch with me, you can stop by at asustainablemind.com. And if you'd like to leave a donation, click the donate button at the top of the homepage. I hope to be hearing from you. Welcome to A Sustainable Mind, where we delve into the minds behind today's most impactful environmental campaigns, organizations, and startups, inspiring the environmental changemakers of tomorrow. I'm your host, Marjorie Alexander. Jay Sinha is co-owner and co-founder of Life Without Plastic with business partner Chantal Plamondon. Life Without Plastic is a one-stop shop for safe, high-quality, ethically sourced, and earth-friendly alternatives to plastic products that you use in your everyday life. Jay has a background in biochemistry, ecotoxicology, and law. And actually, if you've been a listener for a while, you might remember hearing his episode, which was episode number 7, entitled "There's BPA in My What?" So that's a fun episode. If you want to check that out, head on over to asustainablemind.com or just listen wherever you're listening to this podcast. It'll be episode 7. Jay, it's so good to have you back. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Marjorie. It's great to be here.
I am so happy to have you back. I believe you might be the first guest that I've had back on the show.
What an honor.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you with us. I've been, hearing a lot about this microplastic issue over the last couple of years, and it's kind of things seem to be escalating, and I definitely want to touch on that. And anyone that wants to kind of go back to the first episode where Jay talks about his background and the environment and how that played a role in his childhood, please go back and listen to episode 7. Those were the early days, so my interviews might sound a lot different than they do now, but I hope you enjoy that episode. For this one, we're going to just kind of jump right in because I know that we have a lot to cover. So Jay, if you could give us just a little bit of your professional background, biochemistry and ecotoxicology. What the heck does that mean?
Right. Well, I have a degree in biochemistry and then a graduate diploma in ecotoxicology. And well, biochemistry is looking at the very small, I guess, reactions that occur in the body at the cellular level, not just in the body, but at the cellular level. And ecotoxicology goes one step further by looking at the effects of chemicals on the environment around us and how they interact with the environment and the effects they have on the environment, both at the flora and fauna level. So both in terms of water, land, plants, animals, birds, fish, insects, it really the interactions of chemicals with the environment is how I would describe it in a very general way.
Mm-hmm. And that background led you to found a business, lifewithoutplastic.com. That's been your business for several years now. And obviously, you have the scientific background, but tell me a little bit more about why you created that from a more practical perspective, that business.
Sure. Well, my business partner, Chantal, and I began the business, Life Without Plastic, about, at this point, 12 years ago. Wow. And yeah, it's been a while. And it came out of experiences in our own lives in terms of trying to avoid our exposure, our personal exposure to toxic chemicals in our everyday life. And it was largely catalyzed as well by the birth of our son, who is now 15 But when he was first born, we were looking for alternatives to plastic products, mainly because we had had some issues with mold and were quite sensitive to environmental toxins ourselves. So we wanted to increase exposure overall. And when our son came along, we, for example, were looking for alternatives to plastic baby bottles and water bottles and food containers. And initially with the baby bottles came across glass ones, which used to be the norm, but this was back in like 2003, they were very hard to find. They have come back again. At that point, they were hard to find. And so Chantal, my business partner, found a supplier and in the States who was still making them and contacted them, and they were able to supply them, but they only did wholesale. The minimum order was 1,000. So that's one of the things that started the business in terms of the products we offer.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I want to jump right in here. Let's talk about the impact that plastics have on our body, or to be more specific, BPA. And I know that we spoke about endocrine disruptors.
Endocrine disruptors, yes.
And that there are several of them. But the thing that I think most of us, even if we're eco-conscious, don't exactly know is how it impacts the body and why. So, you know, don't drink out of plastic water bottles, right? It's bad for the environment, but it's also bad for your body. People know that, but they don't really understand how that happens, what that looks like, what happens in the body. Is it reversible? Like, nobody really, I feel like we know to stay away from it, but we're not exactly sure what the effects are and if those effects are already going on in our bodies as we speak.
Yeah, sure. Well, you've touched on all the key elements of the issue there. So endocrine disrupting chemicals are, and you mentioned a couple of very common sources, one being bisphenol A and another being phthalates. Bisphenol A is very common in bottles, less so now as there are alternatives to them that are BPA free, although this is another issue there. A lot of the replacements actually contain endocrine disrupting chemicals as well, even from the same bisphenol family. They might be bisphenol C or F, just not A. That's a whole other issue. But so BPA is one, phthalates are another. They're used very often as plasticizers in softer plastics. They're also used as fragrances in all kinds of consumer products. And again, with BPA, another common use is in the ink on cash register receipts, which can come off on your fingers very easily and through your skin, which is, many people don't realize, is the largest organ in the body and most widespread. We have skin all over us, can go directly into the bloodstream. So those are two examples of endocrine disrupting chemicals. And what EDCs, endocrine disrupting chemicals, are, they're really imposters in the body. They imitate natural hormones that are in our body, such as, for example, estrogen. Both BPA and phthalates are estrogen mimicking chemicals. And so they come into the body and interact with the hormone receptors in the body, but produce non-normal effects. And some of those effects can be adverse effects, which can wreak slow, steady, long-term havoc on our health. So this is the big question right now with plastics. The environmental problems are clear. We can all see the pollution in the ocean. We can all see the effects of a six-pack plastic ring around the neck of a seal, and that's very obvious. The health effects, we're going to be hearing more and more and more about them in the coming years, because the research is going on full speed at many levels on these chemicals, because there are so many of them coming out of plastics. But some of the key things that we're finding is that they tend to have a very strong effect on developmental processes, which makes sense because hormones are at the core of development. And in that sense, EDCs and the chemicals coming out of plastics can be, we think now and are quite certain based on a lot of the research coming out, that have an even more enhanced negative effect on people who are going through developmental stages of life. So that means babies, younger children, toddlers, adolescents with lots of hormones going through their body, pregnant women. So these are what we would call vulnerable populations, groups of the population which are more vulnerable to these chemicals because they have a lot more hormones going through their bodies. So that's sort of a general overview of what they do and how they interact in the body. Another key element to bring out here is that what the research is showing is that very low doses of EDCs can have an amplified effect, which kind of throws, not kind of, it does throw traditional toxicological principles on their head. So in toxicology, traditionally, going way back hundreds of years, the idea was that the dose makes the toxin, and or the dose makes the poison. So if you have more of something, if you're exposed to more of something, you'll get a stronger negative effect. EDCs turn that on the head, because it seems to be that with a lot of them in certain situations, a very tiny, tiny amount can have a more accentuated effect. It's almost as if the EDC goes into the body and it attaches to the receptors. And if there's a small amount, it will have that large effect on the receptors. But if there's a large amount of it, it's like it almost overwhelms the receptors, the hormone receptors, and they shut down and don't show as big of a negative effect. So that's a rather disturbing aspect of EDC effects as well, that very small amounts can have an effect, which is why in large part we have focused on trying to minimize plastic use in general, just to try and minimize your overall exposure to any of these chemicals at any level.
I recently, on and off for many years, have been allergic to hair products, and I'm allergic to a lot of fruits and things as well. And so I thought that it could be, you know, some fruit extracts that they use in hair products as well. But I just really felt like I needed to kind of literally get in there and figure out what was going on before I moved forward with my style as it was. So I just cut all my hair off, and now I feel free.
Well, good for you.
Yeah, but the phthalates, I feel like, was definitely a big part of that. And of course, you know, I was getting rid of products that had all these things that I knew that I was allergic to, but I'm sure that there were tons of stuff in there that I didn't know was bad for me. And so you really do have to take care of your health first.
And it's a really interesting point you bring up, because I think we're going to see more and more of these sorts of allergies showing up. I mean, there's a whole medical field out there known as environmental medicine, of which one particular ailment is multiple chemical sensitivity. And this is a very key sort of factor in sort of the plastic chemicals coming out of plastics realm, because we often get contacted by people who do have a severe sensitivity or allergy to plastics, and to very extreme levels and very disturbing things. And there's a young woman we were contacted by who is unable to eat anything that has touched or been packaged in plastic. And so her and her family went through a long process of trying to figure this out through with allergy specialists. And she has been diagnosed as having a severe sensitivity to plastic. And this is through years of testing. And her symptoms, very difficult symptoms to trace back to one particular ailment, with symptoms like depression, attention deficit disorder, and she also had ovarian cysts. But they now suspect it's been narrowed down to a correlation with autoimmune encephalitis, which is what that means is it seems that the part of her brain that is creating natural estrogens, here we come back to the endocrine disrupting chemicals, part of her brain that's creating these natural estrogens is attacked by her immune system, her own immune system, when synthetic estrogen mimicking chemicals from plastics are introduced into her body.
Oh my gosh.
And she's only in her teens. So, I mean, that's really disturbing to hear about things like that.
Wow.
So it's one example, and it's a very extreme one, obviously. So don't mean to be sensational about it, but it's a reality. These sensitivities are coming probably in greater numbers than we may realize.
Well, in obviously your lifestyle quite different from most traditional consumers in the Western world, but most people are constantly touching plastic or synthetic materials that include these harmful chemicals on an hourly basis, at least. I mean, everything that we pick up practically. in typical daily life, if you're a regular consumer that's not necessarily paying attention to these things, that you haven't necessarily made a choice to say, okay, I'm going to be plastic free, I'm going to buy more natural materials and clothing that's made with natural fibers. Most of us are exposed to these things every single day, all day long, all night. And this brings me to what I've really wanted to talk to you about for the last several months, which is microplastics. Because, you know, the pen that I'm holding right now is plastic. I can see it. I know that when I'm done with it, I can disassemble it and I can recycle it. I can, in the future, choose to purchase different things to write with so that I'm not constantly putting things into the waste stream, things like that. But there's this issue of microplastics, and they seem to be everywhere. So tell me, yeah. Is it more an issue of plastics breaking down into microscopic pieces, or is it plastic that's already in such a fine, you know, so fine that you can't see it, where it's in our clothes or a coating on other other things that we're constantly using? Which is it, or is it both? What's going on there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in short, it's both. You definitely have. So you have larger plastics out in the environment that are breaking down slowly, especially when they're in harsh environments such as the oceans, salt water. Although huge amounts of microplastics are being found in freshwater environments as well. So they're impacted by the water, the friction in the water, by sunlight, being partly eaten by wildlife, being carried around by currents and wildlife. But then you also have other things that are coming into the environment directly as microplastics. And these could be, for example, bits of tire dust from tires. They create an enormous amount of microplastics, both in the air and in the environment. And then, as you mentioned, certainly microfibers from clothing, huge, huge one. They come from the clothing which you're wearing as you're wearing it, but also in much larger amounts when that clothing is washed. And hundreds, even thousands of these microfibers go down the drain with every wash and then go straight out into our water systems because they're much too small to be captured by most wastewater treatment systems. So they go right into the environment as microfibers. Then there's also the issue of microbeads found in personal care products. And we have seen bans on these coming into place in the States, Canada. The ban comes into effect on July 1st. And that's for products such as facial scrubs, shampoos, toothpastes. I mean, even toothpaste. Who would have thought that there would be plastic beads or plastic fibers in there?
That's the little dark bits, right?
Yeah, exactly. They may be blue or clear, but they're used as an abrasive, completely unnecessary. There are all kinds of natural abrasives that could be used. And then they go right into the environment again, being washed down the drain, not caught by wastewater systems, and become pure pollution. So you have it in both ways, breakdown of larger pieces and actual microplastics going out into the environment in the product which they are originally.
So I want to move on one of these things that you mentioned, which is the clothing. And if anyone wants to go back and listen to, I believe, episode 50 with Eva Venari, we talk about the clothes on your body is one of the ways in which these toxic chemicals come in contact with your body all day long, and it can be actually be absorbing those chemicals or those gases coming off of those pieces of clothing. Mm-hmm. As far as the fibers with the clothing, it seems like, and I do not, and I don't like being fatalistic on the show. I always like to try to figure out if there is a solution that we can take part in. Is it something that we as consumers can begin to control? I know that there are special bags you can buy to wash your clothes in, or is it something where it's like, it's in everything, you can't avoid it, it's going to have to be the clothing industry that changes their ways because consumers, you know, we just buy what's available. Like, where can we start to change this on that level?
Yeah, no, it's absolutely both. I mean, it has to happen from the manufacturers, but there are tons of things that we as individuals can do as well. So the worst culprits are things like fleeces, where the fibers are very easily detached from the clothing. So, I mean, one step is avoiding non-natural fiber fleeces. And I mean, one company, which is a large supplier of those, Patagonia, is doing fantastic research on this issue. They're very aware of it and really moving ahead and trying to find solutions to the problem. But in terms of other things that we can do as individuals, you can focus on trying to just purchase non-plastic clothing, things like wool, cotton, silk. And one way to do that is to focus on secondhand clothing stores or vintage clothing stores. Another way is to try and go for to focus on things that simplify your life by focusing on things that you really like. Instead of buying a lot of different things, go for like multi-use, simplicity, versatility, high quality and great fit. It's a few items that really work for you and that are high quality, and they may be a little more expensive if they're, for example, wool or cotton, but they'll last longer and avoid the problem of being plastic. You can also, for example, repurpose if you have clothing that is plastic, such as a fleece or something that is made out of like polyester or nylon. Instead of throwing it into the garbage, where it could go into eventually a landfill and then be broken down and released into the environment as microplastics, try and find a way to reuse it in some way, perhaps as a rag. There are artists all over the world who are using plastics to make art. And not only is that a creative process, but it also has a powerful message underlying it in terms of building awareness about the dangers of plastics and the pollution problem. So those are a few things that can be done. It's not an easy one. And again, there has to be movement on the manufacturing side as well, which we're going to see more and more again as well. Because the problem is just becoming so obvious, and the research on it has become so clear about how much microfibers are actually coming out of these sorts of clothing, especially when they're washed. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that this is something that the government, for instance, putting regulations on beauty products, on any product, that consumers have, for instance, trans fats, I think, was something that there seemed to have been a lot of push and pull on for quite a while, at least here in the United States. And, you know, in my brain, I'm always thinking, okay, if there are public agencies that don't seem to quite be on board with banning these things, what is it that those entities have to gain? So in the case of these plastics, is there anything that would get in the way of a government entity banning these? Is it a shoe-in? Is it something that it's just like, okay, it's just a matter of time. It'll take a few years. They'll get it on the books. Manufacturers will change their process and then it'll just be on to the next challenge? Or is this something that you see is going to be a big fight that we have coming up?
Well, I think it depends on the government, and it depends on who is actually contacting that government, because governments react to stakeholders. And we as individuals are among those stakeholders, but there are a wide range of stakeholders that any government has to listen to and to some extent respond to and actually take action to respond to. So among those stakeholders are businesses, industries, NGOs, academics, and individuals. So it depends on, I think, the strength of the messages that a government is hearing, whether or not they will take action in a certain direction. That's one aspect. The other is the research. The more the scientific research comes out that gives a government material to work with in terms of justifying a decision from a scientific basis, which is very key, obviously. So I think we as individuals, there is a ton we can do in terms of, sending a message to government just through our own actions and what we would like to see out there. It's getting involved with different causes that are close to your heart, such as plastic pollution or environmentalism in general. There are lots of groups out there that do actual lobbying of governments, and that can be one way to go about it. But I really do think there's a lot we can do just individually in our own personal decisions, which eventually filters through into a more of a public consciousness and awareness. And I think that's really what we're seeing now in the whole plastic pollution space, the issue is literally exploding all over the world. And a large part of it is revolving around single-use disposable plastics, which are very easy for any individual to actively decrease in their everyday life. All you've got to do is get your own water bottle, get your own coffee mug, carry your own utensils with you, carry your own bags with you, carry your own food container with you. Right there, you have cut out an enormous amount of plastic waste, which sends a message to people around you, but also to governments. When they see that people are acting in this way, that's obviously an indicator of public sentiment, and that is what governments are there to serve.
Well, that kind of brings me to my next and I think my final question is, so you said you've been in the business, sustainable business, for 12 years with your wonderful website, Life Without Plastic. Got such a great selection of household items, cleaners, actual physical things to help you clean, not liquids. And you all are in Canada, correct?
That's right, yes.
Okay, but you ship to the Canada, the United States. Where else do you ship your products to?
Everywhere and anywhere. Anywhere in the world.
Okay, cool.
Yep.
Excellent. So please, everyone, check out lifewithoutplastic.com. They've got some awesome, awesome stuff there. Where do you see the future of sustainable business going? I mean, large companies and corporations, that's one thing. You know, some of them see the writing on the wall. Some of them are responding to shareholders. They're making the changes that they're going to make. But in terms of small business owners or family-run businesses, people that see a problem out there or see a hole in this niche of environmental sustainability and say, okay, this is a product or a service or a resource that I can provide for people. Let me go down this path. What do you see as the future for sustainable small business? And perhaps what tips can you give for people that are pretty much just starting out, maybe in their first 2 or 3 years of business?
Okay, yeah. Well, we're seeing a shift in the way business operates, certainly at the small scale level, but also at the large scale level, with this movement towards what's being called a circular economy, which moves away from the traditional linear idea of an economy where you take a raw material, make something, and then dispose of it. And the whole idea of a circular economy is more of an idea where there's no waste created. It's more restorative and regenerative. It relies on innovation and redefining products and services to literally design waste out of the whole system, and while minimizing negative impacts. So it's largely a transition to renewable energy resources. But at the small scale level, so those circular economy principles, while they may seem more appropriate for a large scale manufacturing business, they definitely apply to small scale business too. So if you have an idea and are looking to to build it into a business, I think a key element is to look at the impact of it from all directions, like packaging, marketing, who is going to use it, how are they going to use it, and try and come up with a really clear idea of the impact, the overall impact of that product, if it is a particular product. And one way to really go about doing this, and this is what we're really seeing all over in the, I guess I would call it the socially responsible business space, is collaboration. There's no reason why you should be going about this alone. In fact, you shouldn't be, because there are huge communities out there of businesses which are working very hard to work together in the same direction. One core community is Green America, which is based out of the States, but has member businesses from all over the world who are focused on environmentally oriented, but not just environmentally, socially responsible business, I would say. And so that organization is an amazing resource for seeing what other businesses are doing, how they are going about building their businesses, building, like creating their packaging. Are they doing carbon offsets? Are they, how are they organizing their workspace so that is environmentally efficient, environmentally friendly? All kinds of things that you can learn from others. There's no reason at this point with the internet and with resources like Green America to be recreating the wheel. There's so much out there already. You should really be focusing on partnerships, collaboration, and working together with other businesses. I think the whole competitive model of business has changed, and it's shifting away from an individualistic model of business. It's really more and more about community and collaboration and working towards a greater good together.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that. And anyone that wants to hear a little bit more about circular economies, you can check out my interview with Maikwe Ludwig. And that's actually episode number 8. So that's also another early episode, but that's what she's all about. And actually, hopefully I'll have her on again soon to discuss that as well. So, Jay, I want to get into our 7 sustainable questions, and they have changed a little bit since we were last. Gosh, I think that was, man, when was that? Let's see.
It was a while ago.
Two years ago, I think. 2 years ago, yeah.
I would say, yeah.
So last time we were together, the very first question, which is always the same, what is one longstanding habit you believe has significantly improved your life? And your answer was eating well. Do you have another longstanding habit that you can suggest for us?
I do. And it's kind of a collection of habits, but I have a number of morning rituals that I do that really feed my life at so many levels. So it's not one, but it's a collection of rituals. But just to give you a really quick, when I wake up, I have warm lemon water. I have a Qigong practice, which I do daily. And in terms of body care, I certain things I do every day. One is tongue scraping. Another is that I have a cold shower. Although I should qualify that, it's not like a cold shower right away. I have a warm shower, and then at the end it transitions into a cold shower, because when I first did it, I was reading about it, and I was doing the cold shower right away, and that's just kind of crazy. But it's an incredible pick you up for the day, and so these things really feed my life, starting the day on a solid footing with these rituals.
Wow, this is so interesting, because I literally have been crafting my morning ritual just this week. And I think yesterday, for the first time, I'm like, ooh, this is paying off.
Well, Marjorie, I'm going to have to interview you, because I am writing another book, and it's almost done, in fact, all about morning rituals. And I've been interviewing people about their morning rituals.
Oh, so. Boy. You might have to give me a couple more weeks, though.
Okay, no problem.
Still figuring out what works best for me. Let's see, what is a new habit that you're cultivating in your life right now in these last couple of years since we spoke last?
Sure. Well, this kind of flows nicely out of what I said last time about my longstanding habit, because one thing I've been practicing is intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. So often when people hear the word fasting, they think of something pretty intense and several days and painful. What I've been doing, and I've been reading a bit about this too, is periodic fasts of just like 18 to 24 hours. So, I go have a normal day where I'm eating regularly, and then the last meal I have might be at, say, 6 p.m., and then I don't eat again until the next day at 6 p.m. And it has a really fabulous effect on body and mind, I'm finding. I do this maybe once a week, maybe twice, space it out a bit. It just allows the body to rest and, I think, detox. And in that time, all I'm doing is drinking water, that 24 hours, or tea. I drink a lot of tea. And it just gives the body a rest, allows you to clean it out and relax a bit and give the digestive system a break.
I've been hearing a ton about this intermittent fasting, and I think when I started to research it, I was like, okay, well, it seems like, you know, stuff, everything that you eat into 8 to 10 hours. And it was kind of like a race to hit your calorie quota, which it's really not about that. And there are a lot of different ways to go about it. And time frames, and something that you just mentioned, which I'd never thought of, is eating your normal diet and timeline for several days out of the week, and then one day for 24-hour period thereabouts, and then just taking that off, which never occurred to me as an option. So there are a ton of ways that you can go about doing that. Do you have a resource for that specifically that you read into that you found helpful that you can remember?
Offhand, not particular, but I read a lot by Tim Ferriss, and I know he has at least one or two blog posts on fasting, and in some of his books as well has talked about it. He has a book, 4-Hour Body, which talks about fasting. So he has some more extreme methods as well.
Yes, but, he does.
which I'm less enthusiastic about. I think it's important that you go with what works for you. Like, I'm a smaller guy, a thin guy, so I don't want to be doing a hardcore long-term fast. Just not sure it's good for my body.
Right. Cool. I love Tim Ferriss, and I will definitely find a couple of those intermittent fasting posts and put them in the show notes page for this episode. What is one item or resource that you've acquired or found helpful in the last year that's helped you live a more earth conscious lifestyle? Even you, Jay, like the go-to guy for zero plastic everything. Is there something new that you're like, oh, this is actually really helpful for me?
There's the one thing that really does come to mind, which my sister just gave me a little while ago for my last birthday. And this is, it's a blend of oils for oral health. And it's a blend of wild-crafted natural organic oils that you can use in place of toothpaste, but also just for regular oral health. And so I've been trying it in place of toothpaste, so it cuts that out. Or if I really feel I want to brush with toothpaste, then I supplement it. And it's, you just put a few drops of this oil on your toothbrush or even on your dental floss or directly in your mouth and swish it around. And it's a mixture of like almond oil, cinnamon leaf, peppermint, spearmint, clove, myrrh, and manuka. It's a blend called Healthy Mouth Blend by a company called Oral Wellness out of Hawaii. And I'm just loving the effect on my mouth, and it's great for bad breath, but also apparently for gum health, people who have issues. Apparently, and I didn't realize this, about 98% of people actually do have oral health issues, but most don't realize it. And this apparently takes care of them very handily and with good breath to boot.
Very cool. I'll have to look into that. And again, that will be in the show notes page for this episode as well. They say that there is a silver lining in every good struggle. What is one silver lining you've experienced from a difficult time in your journey?
Well, one thing that comes to mind is, I guess, in terms of the business context, as the plastics issue has taken off, and as more and more, we've been there really from the start before this was an issue at all. And in that time, there are all kinds of new products out there and all kinds of new companies doing amazing things and bringing out new products. So in that sense, for what we do, there's more and more. I mean, you could describe it as competition. We think it's good that these things are out there, but it forces us. So it could be seen as negative, but it's really become a positive and a silver lining in that it's forced us to innovate more and to focus on developing more of our own products. And those tend to be the things that do the best with us. So there's that, but it's also, I think, pushed us to collaborate more with others and build new partnerships, which has just been one of the richest parts of this whole business journey. So apart from new business relationships, new friendships that have been formed through some of the people and other companies that we've worked with, that's and all out of what you might call competition, but really it's a desire to shift and work together as opposed to being in competition.
Fantastic. Do you have now last time? So everybody go back to asustainablemind.com/007007. You gave a lot of resources and books last time, and I loved it. And I have been reading those books and visiting those websites on and off since we spoke about it last. So those were amazing resources, and everybody can go check those out. Again, the link is asustainablemind.com/007 for Jay's first interview back in 2016. What is an internet resource that you find helpful on a regular basis that you specifically find helpful, a new one that you can share with our listeners?
Yeah. I don't have in front of me what I did say before, but really the one that I tend to use the most, really pretty much on a daily basis, is treehugger.com. They just have such a wide range. I really like the writers, for one, and the way they approach issues and their take on them. But it's such a wide range of environmentally oriented topics that they touch on. There's obviously a fair bit on the plastics issue, but much, much more than that, about healthy living in general, tiny houses, about alternative energy, food security, various things that interest me. I get little snapshots there. I subscribe to their daily feed, and there's always something that interests me in every single one, because it's a mix of environmental issues, but also at the personal level, personal development and personal growth. It's a really neat mix that way.
Awesome. And last time you recommended the books Slow Death by Rubber Duck and Talks In, Talks Out, which are both fantastic reads. I suggest them for anyone that is interested in eco-living. What is another book that you might recommend for sustainable minds out there?
Mm-hmm. I'll mention two quickly. one would be books by Adria Vasil. She's a Canadian author who has written a series of books, called the Ecoholic book series. And her books are amazing. They're really great how-to books. They're great complements to Slow Death by Rubber Duck and Talks In, Talks Out. And she gives all kinds of tips. There's a bit of a Canadian focus, but it goes way beyond that too. And she gives tons of tools for living environmentally. And the other I would mention are the books of Tim Ferriss. He's has several out now, beginning with The 4-Hour Work Week and most recently with Tools of Titans and Tribe of Mentors. And if you're looking for, like, as you say, a shift, people that want to shift their mindset, I would go straight to Tools of Titans or Tribe of Mentors, because he distills down, he interviews some of the top performing, most fascinating people in the world about their tips and tools for the way they live. And it's just a powerful distillation of what can work in living a really rich, impactful life. It's a real sort of quick and easy resource for finding all kinds of interesting ways to improve yourself and what you can do in this life.
Awesome. Yeah. I love Tim Ferriss, and I actually had not heard of this Tools of Titans. I'd not heard of that one, so I'll have to check that one out. And our final question, if you could give your 10-year-old self any piece of advice, what would it be?
It would be to be careful of other people's opinions and advice about what they think you should do with your life or almost with anything. And take everything with a grain of salt, and then and listen to your heart, what you think you should be doing, and really factor that in. Just don't take other people's opinions at face value. Dig deeper into yourself and do a bit of research, both with yourself and outside, and figure out what's really best for you at that time.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Jay, for joining us again. I want everyone to go check out the website lifewithoutplastic.com. There are a ton of wonderful resources to read in their blog. And of course, you can grab tons of natural products. They have everything from plastic-free packing tape to your typical eating containers and utensils and water bottles that are plastic-free. You can find all of those right there at lifewithoutplastic.com. And of course, you can catch them on all the typical social media. Jay, do you have any final words or parting pieces of guidance to give sustainable minds out there?
My business partner Chantal and I wrote a book called Life Without Plastic, the practical step-by-step guide to avoiding plastic to keep your family and the planet healthy. It's a resource guide, but it's very accessible. And there's really something for everyone in there, whether you're just starting out on this journey or an experienced person living without plastic for a long time already. We've really done a deep dive and given a lot of resources and background about the issue itself, but about all kinds of things anybody can do in their everyday life to try and decrease their plastic use. So hope it's useful to people. And I guess following on that, my one piece of advice to Sustainable Minds listeners would be just try and do one thing to decrease your plastic use. And it doesn't have to be anything uncomfortable. It could be as simple as refusing a straw at a restaurant because you don't need it. Telling the server up front, I don't need a straw. Please don't bring me one. That can have a huge impact. That's one less straw that may go out into the environment and be eaten by a fish or a turtle. It may seem minimal, but it has an impact.
I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. I want to thank Jay for sitting down with us once again and explaining the finer points of microplastics in a way that we can all understand. It's such an important issue right now and one that is impacting every single one of us. So I hope that you all can take some of the tips that Jay mentioned and incorporate those into your everyday life. If you want to know more about his company, Life Without Plastic, and the book by the same name, you can access those as well as all of the resources mentioned in today's episode by visiting asustainablemind.com/057. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on A Sustainable Mind.